Welcome to the AP Now podcast, the podcast that covers trends, insights, and emerging issues impacting every accounts payable function. Your host, Mary Schaefer, is the founder of AP Now, a B2B digital information and learning company focused on all issues related to AP. Stay tuned as Mary and her guests discuss the business intelligence you need to ensure a cost-effective, technologically efficient, fraud-resistant, regulatory-compliant accounts payable function. Without further ado, let's dive right in.
Welcome to episode 36 of the AP Now podcast. I'm Mary Schaefer from AP Now, and on this episode, I'm really pleased to welcome somebody from around the globe, Sandra Furman from Melbourne, Australia. She's here today to talk about AP technology and how to make sure that it promotes the right behavior. Welcome, Sandra. I'm really pleased that you were able to join us today. I know we've emailed several times, but this is the first time we actually got to speak in person.
It's lovely to be here, Mary. Thank you.
Oh, okay. Just a teeny bit about Sandra before we start sharing her views. She's got a really interesting take on this. Sandra is originally a New Zealander who now works as an AP manager in Melbourne, Australia. She's worked in several organizations, both in the private sector and in government. So she brings to us a wealth of experience. So now, Sandra, you know, I put this little map up there because I'm quite impressed about how far away you are and the time difference, and yet we all seem to have the same problems. I know here on the East Coast of the United States, it's about 5 o'clock, a little after 5, Thursday afternoon. When is it? What day and time are you in Melbourne?
It's about 9:15 on Friday morning.
Okay. So a bit of a time difference. Okay. But we're still managing to talk. So we had emailed and you had sent me some really interesting thoughts that, you know, as soon as I saw them, I knew I wanted to do a podcast with you on this. And your first, you know, philosophy, which I really liked, you said technology is our servant, not our master. Could you expand on that a little bit?
Sure. In my opinion, technology was designed to make our lives easier and unfortunately cut out some human intervention, which is a blessing and a curse in many ways.
Right.
It's not there. It's not there to demand that we run to its tune. It needs to run to our tune. And with the programs that come in at the moment, everybody says that this program, whiz bang, out of the box, you can put it straight in your team and it will run like magic, and it's based on best practice principles and all you need to do is run it. Well, every organization seems to be different. I know that when you get an invoice, the bottom line is, do I pay it or don't I pay it? In a sense, around the world, it's the same for us all. So when we get this technology out of the box, does it suit our situation? Now, in all of the places that I've been, everybody runs something differently. People run manual systems where they stamp things and sign things and forward things. And our situation here at the moment, we like to think that we are not cutting edge or bleeding edge, rather, but we are up there. We get our invoices in and we automatically put them through an OCR program, and out they go through an electronic process. But if we work with Oracle and Kofax. I don't know if you're familiar with those products.
Yeah.
But to make it work how it works best in our system means that we want to customize a whole pile of stuff.
Ooh.
Now, when you get... Yeah, and that's the problem. And this is the balance that we all face, in that when you take it out of the box, it's you buy the product, you have it installed, and you run it. But everybody has to run according to what the program dictates. If you then start customizing it, it costs a lot more for the technicians to come in and change it. And it makes it more difficult when that program gets an upgrade, and you've got to upgrade not just the program, but all of your customizations.
Yeah, that's been a nightmare for some companies.
Oh, well, it is. In our situation, when you've got a large entity such as ours and they decide Oracle's the way to go, customizing that beast is difficult. And yet at the same time, you've got to make it work for you. So finding the balance is really, really difficult. My contention has always been to argue that we do the difficult part in the programming to make it simple for the people. Because if you don't make it simple for the people and they've got to run around and do what the program requires, you've got less buy-in, you've got people more reluctant to make the changes, and it just becomes more difficult all around. On the other hand, it's expensive to get people in to do all these customizations, and people who are always very money conscious are really hesitant to spend that amount of money up front.
Yeah. We found in the United States a lot of companies, if you went back like 5 to 10 years ago, were customizing everything, and then there was an upgrade and nothing worked. And so we have
That's right.
I don't want to say nobody customizes anymore, because, you know, of course, I'd end up with egg on my face. But most companies are trying to steer away from that for the very reasons that you're talking about.
Yeah. And I understand that, but it just makes it difficult with the implementation. And some of the ways that people do it, they do it to save money. For example, there's an example where someone's tried to cut down on licensing, and I'm not particularly talking about Oracle or any particular thing, but to cut down on the licensing costs has meant that we've had to put on extra people on a help desk to help people navigate the more complex process that we had to put in place.
Right.
So where's your actual dollar value?
Right. You saved with one hand and then you're spending elsewhere.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So unless the system is intuitive, and a lot of these are not built, you've got to be really careful about program that you want, but often accounts payable is the last tick box before they say, yes, it's going to work for this part of the company, that part of the company, that part of the company will buy it. Oh, accounts payable, this is how it works.
Yeah.
And we have to adapt.
Yeah. One of the interesting things that we're seeing over here is there's starting to be products that are actually developed for accounts payable and are intuitive. So I think the next 5 to 10 years should be really interesting in accounts payable.
Well, I look forward to that. But the other thing is, too, is that when you've got a big program such as Oracle, then you've got all these bolt-ons. You've got something for stock management, and because Oracle's expensive, then you've got something for people and culture and your payroll systems, and then you've got something for accounts payable, and then you've got then they all try to integrate, and then it becomes a nightmare.
Yeah. I don't know
that there's an answer, Mary, to be honest.
Yeah. Okay, your next interesting concept or approach, I don't know, is that you say the system should promote the right behavior. And I loved that. When you wrote that to me and I saw that, I was like, oh, that's great. And do you want to talk about how it should promote the right behavior with regards to invoices, you know, near and dear to our hearts?
Sure. I think it's really important to work out what right behavior it is that you want. For example, do you require that all invoices should be sent directly to accounts payable? Now, in our dream world, the purchasers, the buyers, would tell the supplier the purchase order number or give them some kind of reference.
Mm-hmm.
The supplier would kindly put that onto the invoice and send it directly into accounts payable. Now, that's problematic on its own. But if you want to promote that behaviour, what I did in one place I worked was that we blocked any invoices coming into us from internal sources. And people got onto that quite quickly, because even though we had the invoice in hand in the accounts payable, we actually blocked it from the email system and send it back to them, and they got really angry to start off with. But we had done quite a communication process to start off with, to say the invoice must come in from suppliers. And the reason for that was that they used to sit around on people's desks for ages, and then all of a sudden they become urgent.
Yep.
And as soon as something becomes urgent, everybody runs around in a panic and the normal day-to-day stuff gets interrupted. It's easy to make mistakes. Fraudulent things can happen so easily. So, you know, we found that invoices were in the glove box of utes and gone through the wash on people's pockets. You know, they'd gone out with the dishes on the plate of sandwiches. So we made the rule. So then how in the system are you going to enforce that rule? The right behaviour. So we just didn't accept it. And the entity learnt quite quickly. Another one is, should the purchase order be raised before the invoice? Now, that might seem logical to you and me, but I've had people come to me and say, well, where does it say that in the policy? And I'm thinking, well, what the hell do you think? Excuse me, I shouldn't say hell. Why on earth are you raising purchase orders in the first place? And the answers that I got from that question were really quite revelationary, because they had no idea why they were raising them, just the fact that they had to raise them. So we had to start another program about you raise the purchase order because, well, I'll list down all the reasons. It tells the supplier what you want, where you want, who to contact, what the payment terms are, where to send the invoice, where to send the goods, because the last thing we want is a tractor arriving in the middle of the CBD.
Right.
So if that's the right behaviour that you want to encourage, then when you get the invoice in and it doesn't quote a purchase order number, it goes through the system without a purchase order number. And they can scream as much as they like, but I raised the purchase order for that. Yes, but you didn't raise it beforehand. You didn't send it to the supplier. And I'm wondering why you bothered doing that work in the first place. Another one of my principles that perhaps at another time is that everything you do should add value to the process. So if you're doing work that adds no value, then the entity that you're working for is losing valuable resources and wasting your time.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another thing. So how do you work the system to promote that? Well, you simply cannot link that purchase order and it goes through on some report that you didn't have a purchase order for that invoice. Bang, your name is out there in some kind of way that's going to promote a chat.
That's a nice way to put it. Yeah. We actually... I've run into cases to companies where they don't do the purchase order. Accounts payable's jumping up and down. We need the purchase order. So they say, give me the invoice. I'll make the purchase order. And they take the information right off the invoice. Of course, if there's an incorrect price on the invoice, voila, you're never going to find it, because they copied the incorrect price now onto the purchase order.
I'm not saying that everybody in where I work agrees with me on this. They don't, that's for sure. May I mention purchasing department?
Yes, you may.
In my opinion, if you've got an invoice, we know we've got the goods because, well, we don't know. In accounts payable, we get the invoice. We don't know we've got the goods, so we ask.
Right.
But we do have the goods. The price is right. The invoice is perfectly correct for tax purposes and what have you. Mm-hmm. There should be nothing that stops that invoice getting paid to the supplier because of our internal processes. That's going to hold up payment, and the supplier pays the price with a late payment rather than, you know, they shouldn't be paid late because of something that we did wrong.
Right, because we were not efficient.
You know what I mean?
Yes, because we didn't do what we were supposed to do, so the supplier should not pay for it. Okay.
Correct.
Yeah.
So again, if you have the system that says, right, I've got an invoice, it doesn't have a purchase order, it should have had a purchase order. The question then becomes to the entity, do you want to return that to the supplier and say, I'm sorry, but this had to have a purchase order, or do you want to put that through the system? So you send it to the buyer and say, did you get this stuff? Is that the right price? Is that what you got? What's the charge code? And then it goes through to someone with some sort of delegation to approve it. And they say, oh yes, I knew we were getting that. I'm happy to pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
Very simple, three simple steps. Or do you send it back? And then they raise the purchase order, then they send it to the supplier, then the supplier sends it to you. Sometimes it's worth the educational time taken to actually go around the long way to make it simpler in the future. Or sometimes, depending on value, you just get it through 2 points of approval and then you can just queue for payment on the correct date.
Yeah, yeah. I like the education value, but it sure aggravates it aggravates people. Okay. We're going to come back and talk some more about this, but first we have a word from our sponsor. AP professionals know invoices are easy to lose, and it takes time to track down approvers, while also having to code, log, cross-reference, verify, reconcile, and cut checks, all while staying compliant. Stamply simplifies all that. When invoices enter the system, Stamply's AI, called Billy the Bot, immediately gets to work by proposing GL codes, approvers, and flagging issues like PO mismatches and potential duplicates. AP simply confirms the information is correct and submits the invoice for approval. Now here's the best part. Stamply fixes the disconnected communications between approvers, accounts payable, and vendors. With Stamply, conversations are centered around each invoice, and anyone can be invited to the conversation, getting to an approval decision up to 5 times faster. Visit stamply.com/APnow. See for yourself how your team can work smarter, not harder. That's stamply.com/APnow. All right, continuing on about talking about promoting right behavior, correct behavior, or best practice behavior, whatever you want to call it. Can we talk a little bit now about how this works with authorizations and coding?
Sure. The system should allow or should be programmed such that the correct people get to approve the correct items. For example, if you've got something to do with this part of your business, someone from a different part shouldn't really be able to approve that purchase, because it's not their budget, it's not their responsibility, so they shouldn't be able to do it. Even if they've got $1 million of authorization, they can't authorize $120 for a morning tea, for example, for that particular different business. So the system needs to be geared so that it promotes this. Now, that's not easy to do. You could do it by charge codes and allow different business units only to approve within a certain charge code range.
Yeah.
Or you could do it based on a hierarchical structure based on your reporting structure. So if I want to buy something, it goes to my manager depending on what level of authorization it is. So these things can be built into a system that promotes the good behavior. If you allow willy-nilly all over the place, then you can have, it's more chance for collusion and someone loses track of their budget so that they're not in complete control of what's happening in their unit.
That's true. That's absolutely true.
Yeah, as far as charge codes go, I've seen charge codes in all sorts of different structures. Where I'm working at the moment, we've got 7 different parts to our charge code. So we've got the entity, we've got where the money's coming from, we've got which project it belongs to, we've got which physical location it's attached to, we've got the account code, you know, travel, stationery, whatever, and all of these are different elements of the one charge code. Now, in the system that I'm currently working with, and I'm trying very hard to get it changed, is each of those segments has a different field that has to be entered. But what that means is that somebody with a lot of charge codes that they're using can't just get a Word document and copy and paste that whole string into your charge code area. So if we concatenated the charge codes, we've got more of a chance of the copy and paste. Now, with copy and paste, you're not worried about transposition of digits or manually entering things.
Right.
You're going to enter it in the right time. Now, in other programs, you can use drop downs, and these need to be built into the system, not system wide, but for that individual person who's dealing with a specific area of the company to use charge codes that they use frequently and give them names, numbers. I know a lot of people, we do numbers, we like numbers, but if you've got, for example, stationery for human resources, call it stationery for human resources, and then the charge code automatically comes up. Let's just be sensible about some of these things so that it makes it easy. If it's easy, people will do it right. If you make things complicated and you've got to enter in all those charge code fields and then you've got to remember and look up whatever, people will make mistakes and they'll have a guess. And when they have a guess, the chances of getting it right are reduced significantly.
Not good.
So the page itself has got to be intuitive for someone who does it maybe once a month, maybe once every 2 months, because they're still buying these regular things. They're the ones who know whether we got it or not, whether the price is right, whatever, but they're not in it for so often that it becomes intuitive to them. The page has got to be intuitive.
That's true.
My opinion.
Yep.
So it's got to be easy to complete whatever screen comes up in front of you. It's got to be really simple to do.
I'm a big believer in copy and paste because it's just so easy to, especially when you're talking about a string of numbers. I think that many people, we've learned that when we went to email, because you get one digit wrong, the email doesn't go through. So
yeah,
people are
exactly.
A little bit more cognizant of that. All right. And let's talk about timeliness.
Mary, Mary, where do I start? Seriously, I refuse to be held accountable if our payments are not made on time. Now, our rule is that payments are made 30 days from the date of the invoice. That's our company policy. But I've got no control over, I can get the invoice into the system. I can make sure in Australia we've got goods and services tax,
yep.
GST. Mm-hmm. Some items have it, some items don't. And our invoice formatting is quite particular to make sure that we get that coding correct. So in my team, accounts payable, we make sure that the invoice that arrives is technically correct, that there's GST where they should be, that the supplier has been registered for GST. That we can do. That's a finance role. We know what we're doing, and we send that into the system for matching to a purchase order for approvals or whatever it is that particular invoice needs. Now, the time taken in the business unit to receipt the purchase order or to confirm they've got those goods in some other way is completely out of my control, so I will not be held accountable for it. And I think that's important for accounts payable people, because often we're in the gun for late payments.
Right.
But if we're not,
it's accounts payable's fault, but we didn't get it until yesterday.
Correct. And that again goes back to what we talked about before. Invoices should come directly to mm-hmm. accounts payable. We've got a strict timeline of 48 hours to get it in, and it's in the system correctly in 48 hours. So with 30-day payment terms, that leaves plenty of time for the business units to do whatever it is they need to do. Now, we also found that a lot of our invoices weren't being done in a timely manner, for a number of reasons. So what we're doing now is we're sending out, and we've been doing this for a number of years, a report to all of our business managers and financial managers within the businesses. These are the transactions that are currently waiting for someone in your area to do something Ooh. With. Now, so we send that out every week.
Okay.
Now, we're not actually getting a lot of traction there, because at the moment we're finding that just under 50% of all of the invoices that are on that report are over 30 days old from the invoice date.
Yeah.
Now, that doesn't reflect when we actually got the invoice. It doesn't reflect. It only reflects when my team got
right.
the invoice.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, I beg your pardon. It reflects the invoice date, but it may have only been in the system for a day if someone right. had sent it in to us from a business unit or something like that. So
right.
it doesn't reflect when entity got the invoice. It reflects the invoice date, which is why I do it like that.
Mm-hmm.
Other people, because I can say that we've got something 90-something percent paid on time based on the 30 days from when we receive it to payment.
Mm-hmm.
But if we take it from the invoice date, which is the supplier expectation of 30
right.
days,
right.
then we have way, way less. 50 or 60% would be overdue, mm-hmm. which is ridiculous. And
right.
so I'm trying to take that up to the executive and say, look, these are name and shame at an executive level, because if you want to have good behaviour,
right.
you've got to have a look and say, well, what happens to bad behaviour?
Right.
What
if
are
nothing,
your options?
If nothing happens, if there are no consequences, nobody's going to change.
Correct.
Yeah.
And consequences are actually really difficult to manage. You can't fire, well, you, I suppose you could, depending on the type of entity that you
yeah.
work with. But I've had senior people come to me and say, I wish people would stop buying stuff because we haven't got budget. And I'm saying, well, where are all your controls in place? Why
right.
don't you just give them warnings? You know,
right.
you can do first warning, second warnings, third
right.
warnings. You can say, well, those goods have to be returned. I don't know how your company policy is. Working in government, it's a little bit difficult to say, well, that's coming out of your pay because you had no authorization to pay that.
Right. Yeah.
To buy that, rather.
But even in private industry, it just doesn't fly, unfortunately.
Exactly. Exactly. So you've got to work out what punitive measures you can put in place. Name and shame is quite good at an executive level, because they do not like in front of their
right.
other executives.
Right.
But down at down at your lower levels, people really don't care because they've just got so much else to do. And we find that accounts payable and finance, they're basically buying what they need to do, not what they need to get to do their job, because most people aren't unemployed to approve invoices.
Right.
That's our job. I've had counselling for it and I still love it.
Right.
But the to them, it's just an annoyance in their day because everybody's, right. you know, cutting down on staff and staff have got more work to do that
right.
this just becomes an annoyance. They've got what they want. They get on with their job and this becomes a pain. So any way that we can make it simple for them, we're more likely to get timeliness as well.
Right. The other problem with that is they're overworked. And now here comes the invoice for them to approve. And sometimes they'll just approve it without even verifying that, yeah, this I did order this.
And that's
the price.
Yeah, that's true. That is absolutely true. The other thing, too, as far as timeliness goes, is that the current system I'm working at sends the invoice through to individuals. In one place I work, we had the concept of a hub where a number of people have responsibility for that one transaction. Now, getting them to customise the system so that everybody with a generic email address logs into this hub, but you've still, for an audit trail, have to work out who's actually doing the transaction. So that becomes a technical issue. But if you can get past that, and there are ways of doing that, then you can, if someone is away, then that invoice doesn't sit in their inbox waiting for them to log in and deal with it. So part of the reason we send those reports is so the business manager and the finance manager can look and say, oh, well, I know that Shirley's away at the moment. We'll get that transferred to Jack, who's here and who can deal with it. Mm-hmm. Now, that all takes time. If you've got a hub of people who are working on a similar thing, you all log into the same place. The fact that Shirley's away doesn't matter because Jack's logged into the same place and can see it and deal with it. Now, your IT department and your HR department don't like that because you set up generic people who've got managers, charge codes, and everything attached to them, but you still need to know the individual who actually did that transaction so they can be held accountable.
Right.
So there are ways of thinking about it. It's just a matter of talking to purchasing, talking to IT, and trying to, because if you can, again, make it simple, people will do it.
Right.
So hubs are powerful. I think they're powerful, but I've got resistance, you know.
You're not alone.
Anyway.
You're not alone.
No. Yeah. And then there's an escalation process. So how do you escalate it?
Yeah.
And then you've got, then you have a restructure happening and the escalation just goes out the door.
Right. Because everybody's got a lot of work to do already.
That is exactly right. And for them who are not who are not finance or AP or purchasing, that's the main part of their job. It just becomes an irritation.
Right. They just want to do their job and not deal with this paperwork.
Exactly.
Yeah. Some concluding thoughts on promoting good behavior.
How do I sum up all that, Mary? That's a very hard question. Make the system as simple as you can possibly make it so that people are encouraged to do the right thing because the system won't allow them to do the wrong thing. And when they do get in, they can do it simply and easily and it will get it right.
Very well put. Very well put. Thank you very much, Sandra, for coming and sharing your views. And I'd like to say I hope you'll come back another time and talk some more. I know we've had some pretty interesting emails from you.
Thank you. Well, I'd love to, actually.
Good.
Someone will listen to me.
Yeah.
How do I get listened to, Mary?
As one of a woman that I met when I was in England at a conference recently, she said, I could talk about accounts payable all day, but nobody will listen to me.
I am on her page.
Yeah. All righty. I'd like to thank Stamply, a leader in AI-powered invoice automation, for sponsoring this event. Also, if you like this podcast, please take a moment to rate this episode, review this episode, subscribe to the series, or even better, share it with your community on LinkedIn, Facebook, or your staff. To be alerted to new episodes, please visit www.ap-now.com and sign up for a free twice-a-week e-zine. It also contains tips and news of upcoming AP Now webinars, article postings, and of course, more episodes like this. Again, a thanks to Sandra, and I hope to see you all on another AP Now podcast. Mm-hmm.